This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
I mean, my gosh, guys, he's unbelievable.
This country was built on hard work, added value, and talent, not on equal outcome.
Mark Reardon.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
Yeah, he has that effect on people.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Democrats didn't stand to keep men out of women's sports. They couldn't even clap for a girl who got her head smashed in by a man on a volleyball court. Democrats didn't stand for an innocent and beautiful child who is surviving brain cancer. They opposed eliminating taxes on tips and Social Security. They didn't stand in favor of cutting taxes for hardworking Americans. They couldn't even clap for two mothers whose daughters were killed by illegal aliens. One of the only things that could get Democrats off their feet last night was cheering for Ukraine, not for America.
I love Carolyn. She's doing such a great job. She highlights everything that is true about last night. You know, there's all kinds of fact checkers. I saw Glenn Kessler in the Washington Post and the dude on CNN last night because I was checking Jennings out. The fact checkers, and look, I'll be the first to admit that Trump, he embellishes quite a bit. He says things that probably aren't true, but let's just look at what happened, the theatrics of last night. First of all, good afternoon, everyone. Sue, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
This weather's put me in a bad mood, and the Democrats have put me in a bad mood. And Fred, poor Fred, I'm telling you, he needs his vacation, Sue, so badly, because he does a show sheet every day, and I saw it come in, and first it said it was Friday. And then he scratched Friday out and he put Thursday, and I had to inform him that it was Wednesday.
Oh,
so I'm worried. You need a break, and we want you to have your break here in a couple of weeks.
I'm working ahead because I'm not.
That's what it is.
Well, I know, and we don't want you to be stressed out. But anyway, who watched last night?
I can't take it.
I don't blame you. Yeah, you know, I did the whole thing though.
I
watched, and then I watched the post game because I wanted to see what was being said.
I heard they were going to hold up little signs that said Elon lies or whatever, and
steals.
I thought I can't
Elon
steals. That's what it was, and I thought that's so immature and ridiculous and disrespectful. I just can't.
They had paddles that they were fun. It was really. Now, I was watching because the point that, you know, Carolyn made right there, you had a child cancer survivor. You had talk of planting a flag on Mars, fighting crime, helping working families, you know, catching terrorists, destroying the cartels. You had a guy that was awarded a West Point admission during the speech. They couldn't even cheer for that.
A released hostage.
Wait a minute. Seriously? What did they do then?
They just sat there. Now, because I was watching carefully. They certainly didn't stand up. There were moments when some of these other things happened where a smattering of Democrats, you know, applauded. But this is the game that they play. I mean, if we're being completely honest, if the Republicans are in the room, they're not clapping alongside everything either. But here's the difference. If you go back 4 years, I heard Kaylee talk about this morning. She went back and watched some of the tape of Biden, you know, despite the fact that you have to give him credit for just getting through it, because we know he was probably napping 5 minutes before the speech. The Republicans stood up. John Lewis was honored. Mike Johnson got up right behind President Biden and stood up last year. So there are things that the Republicans and the Democrats should get together on. I'm still shocked by the women's sports thing. I really am.
Yeah.
That not one Democrat in the Senate, even John Fetterman, voted for that. And it doesn't make sense. We'll talk to Selena Zito about that a little bit later in the show. But let me give you a little alternative feel of what happened yesterday. Here's Simone Sanders on MSNBC, and she's sitting there with our former Senator Claire McCaskill. And what she says, and then there's Michael Steele. Michael Steele, Fred, how would you describe it? He's a former RNC chair, right?
Yeah.
He used to be like normal. I don't know what it is. There's the Never Trumpers are really a weird breed. It's one thing, by the way, I can understand how someone, I certainly can understand how people don't like the behavior, the abrasiveness, the brashness. I've been a critic of that. There's a big difference between not supporting Donald Trump and supporting the other side vocally. And that's what former Republicans and people who claim to be Republicans are doing, like Michael Steele. Now, Simone Sanders is not a Republican, but she feels like the Democrats should have done more. You know, you had this dude, so you didn't see this, right? So you don't know what happened. Congressman Al Green, he's the hero for the Democrats. He gets up there, he starts shaking his fist, calling
77 years old.
77 years old. And wait, we need to check this because I heard Griff Jenkins talking about this today, that, you know, that little kid that was honored last night, they think he's from
Texas.
His district, yep. Right? So this is what happened when he was removed last night.
That's your warning.
There's a bunch of yelling back and forth. And then they finally said, okay, get him out of there, right? But it was almost like, and here's what happens when you have protests that are like in downtown St. Louis for something, whatever people want to protest, whether it's the, you know, the Gaza stuff, if they want to support terrorists or BLM, there's an agreement that is made with the cops. Okay. People might not know this, but the organized protesters say, hey, we're going to sit there in front of the, you know, the building, we're going to kneel down or we're going to do whatever, we're going to sit, and then you're going to come and arrest us, and here's the people who are going to be arrested. And then they can show people taken away in handoffs. These things are organized, right? So was that organized last night? Was he the guy that was,
That's a
you
good
know,
question.
I don't know, but here's what Simone Sanders says. She says it wasn't enough because what all the Democrats did, you just left.
Thank you, Simone.
Can we talk about it?
The bingo signs were killing me. I don't know who thought up the bingo signs, but they should be fired.
Michael, this is an indictment, in my opinion, on the Democratic leadership.
Now, keep in mind, what they're criticizing here is they feel like the Democrats didn't do enough, because what she's going to describe here is that the leadership basically said, okay, just kind of play nice here because we're in, you know, the hallowed halls of Congress.
I talked to a lot of members during they was texting. The staff were on my phones and they were calling. And I think the best way to describe it is the Democratic leadership said they didn't want disruptions and they wanted people to attend and bring a guest and they wanted, you know, little business as usual, and we're fighting back in other ways. There is a palpable disgust, as Claire said, from not just the members, but their constituents. And it's like a pot, as someone described it to me, that's boiling and it's about to bubble over. If you do not allow the members a space to or a release valve, it's going to bubble over. And this was the members didn't, the visuals are not taking back the House in 2026.
Okay, so again, keep in mind what she's saying there is that if you want to take back the House and you're a Democrat, you need to fight harder on the resistance. Michael Steele at some point says they should have just all walked out, but here he is.
They weren't going to give the Democrats the quarter. They knew what they were going to do. They knew they were going to try to be disruptive in some form, and their goal was to shut it down in one of two ways.
Republicans.
Both of them worked. USA, USA, as if they own that, you know, that moniker.
Well, we kind of do, because your side hates the country, and that was on full display all the time. So sorry about loving the country, Michael Steele.
And throw them out.
I guess you mean what
should have the Democrats done instead of
throwing them out?
No, no, I'm talking about tonight.
My
what should the Democrats have done tonight instead of what they did?
Some of us believe they shouldn't have shown up.
Yeah, so that's Claire engaging with Michael Steele.
People are children.
Yeah, well, they are children. And here's the problem, you know, because here's what I've heard today, and we'll talk about this a little bit. I've heard, oh my goodness, I've heard the pundits talk about how, you know, this was a campaign speech, right? It was just a rah-rah speech. He didn't offer anything in there. I've heard all this reaction from, like I mentioned, Glenn Kessler and the Washington Post, all the fact checkers and that. Here's a slight problem, though. Guess who liked it? The American people liked it overwhelmingly. Like, it's not even close here. The speech made you feel hopeful. It was like 80% proud, 75% worried. That number's lower. Angry, entertaining, 74%. Inspiring, 71%. Unifying, 62%. That's a YouGov poll. CBS News actually blasted that out. At CBS News poll. How much did that pain them to have to send a tweet out that said, here's their tweet. Most viewers who tuned in say Trump's speech made them feel hopeful and proud. Most speech viewers describe the president as presidential, inspiring, and more unifying than divisive. A big majority also called it entertaining. How painful was that for the progressive intern over at CBS News polling to send out in the middle of this, right?
Unbelievable.
So you had all kinds of things, and there were some really interesting moments that we'll highlight. But here's Scott Jennings. I did tune CNN in, CNN on last night. You had David Axelrod and some of the other crew trying to talk about this. And again, they're all about Trump being, he's making this up. He's exaggerating. You know, the tariffs are worrisome. All this stuff.
This was a horrific night for the opposition party. Regardless of how well she just spoke, it started out with Al Green getting thrown off the House floor because he couldn't keep his emotions under control. Then they had the ridiculous paddles, which now social media is roasting.
That you said false on one side.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, so that Michael Steele was referring to those.
And then finally, and maybe most terribly, the Democrats, who couldn't find it in their heart to stand for objectively good things, including the 95-year-old mother and Mark Fogel, and Mark, who got rescued from a Russian prison, and they couldn't even stand up for that. I thought Democrats came into this speech lost and defeated by Donald Trump, and today it looks to me like they're even more lost and even more defeated than when this speech started.
Yeah, you know, that was a great way to highlight that moment, because why in the world wouldn't you support that? And by the way, it was a promise that was kept by President Trump, and it happened, what, less than 2 weeks until he was in office. So they chose a new United States Senator, Elise Slotkin, from Michigan to deliver the response. You always have a response. This was technically not a State of the Union. It was a joint session of Congress. She's a good choice, okay? I just want to say, because if you watched her last night, she looks like a mom from the Midwest, basically because she's a mom from the Midwest. Now, she's bat-blank crazy on some of these issues, but what you're doing here is, if you're the Democrats and you already screwed up the room because you got your stupid pals and stuff like that, you do want to offer some hope to the rest of America in theory. And Elise Slotkin and Andy Beshear in Kentucky, people like that, they're moderates. They're not the AOC crazy people that really represent the majority of the Democrats. But here she is last night, and they want to blame the prices here 45 days in on Trump.
He's going to make you pay in every part of your life. Grocery and home prices are going up, not down. And he hasn't laid out a credible plan to deal with either of those. For those keeping score, the national debt is going up, not down. And if he's not careful, he could walk us right into a recession.
Yeah, well, the recession talk started a long time ago. Right? It didn't just happen here in the last 45 days. And I'm looking at numbers that are somewhat concerning in the economy. But it's pretty hard. This is, you know, I think this was said by Jennings last night with Axelrod in particular. Do you know how far into the Bush administration that into the Obama administration that they blamed Bush? Pretty much year eight. They blamed George W. Bush on nearly everything. And now we're 45 days into this, and they want to tag this guy with everything. Now, I'll be happy to hold people accountable as we move forward, especially on some of these economic issues. But this was another moment by Elise Slotkin last night.
President Trump loves to say peace through strength. That's actually a line he stole from Ronald Reagan. But let me tell you, after the spectacle that just took place in the Oval Office last week, Reagan must be rolling in his grave.
Let me address that as a Ronald Reagan supporter and someone who came of age. There's all these Cold War analogies and stuff like that. This is nothing like the Cold War. It is nothing like the Cold War. So shut up if you think it is. There are smart people out there, ordinarily smart people who are writing columns about this. This is a very different situation than the Cold War. And for the rest of the planet, we're not positioning nuclear weapons right now. Well, that could happen if we let Ukraine fall. Putin's going to go in and get Poland. Well, Poland and all the rest of these countries, they're NATO members. So we can have a discussion at that point. And I'm not encouraging the United States, President Trump, the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, to bend over at will for Putin. But this whole notion that this is somehow like the mid-60s into the 70s into the end of the 80s when the Berlin Wall fell is ridiculous. It's nonsense.
It is.
Here's where the analogy, let's say that we spent billions and billions and billions of dollars, which, by the way, we did, and we get to the point in 1988, or whenever this was, and then the wall doesn't fall, and the whole thing is for naught, and then the Russians win. Well, guess what? There was an ROI on that whole situation that saved pretty much a good portion of the planet, I think, and gave freedom to so many of these Europeans. And there's deep appreciation for that. I really think there is. I was in Spain a couple of years ago. There's Europeans that are more patriotic about America than many Americans. So now this is the other criticism that is shot back on the Ukraine fund. Well, these numbers, Trump keeps saying, and all you guys say, $360 billion. That's not it. It's $150 billion. I don't care. Again, I don't care if there's one transathlete that's taking the spot of a biological woman in, you know, grade school, middle school, high school, and college. I don't care.
It's not right.
It's not right, right? So I same thing here. I don't care. And I don't think a lot of the American people care right now. We want change. And that's what people voted for. So there's a lot more audio that I can get to here this afternoon. A lot of stuff that I want to cover. We'll get to it all. Plus, a lot of great guests, including Charles Lipson, coming up here in the next hour after Sue's News. We'll visit with our friend Alex Rich from Y98, Selena Zito, in the 5 o'clock hour. And I buried a little bit of the lead. Tish on her way out in St. Louis. We'll cover that as well.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it looked for a while like Tashard Jones, the mayor of St. Louis, wouldn't even make it into the runoff in the top two, but Michael Butler finished third. So
darn
we
it.
Had, but look, Kara Spencer blew her away.
Yeah, she did. It was
and
happy.
We're going to see, you know, we got Fish Fry Fridays coming up this Friday, our first one, and we're going to see if maybe Kara could come by. The runoff is in a few weeks between Kara Spencer and the mayor. I mean, the numbers, and Jane's going to join us a little bit later, the numbers would tell you that Tish is going to get crushed, but
you never know.
You don't, and there's money that's going to be involved here, so we'll talk about that a little later. By the way, we're at Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church at 1910 Serbian Drive next week. Knights of Columbus in Cottleville, Assumption in South County on the 21st, and then the tour continues from there. I've decided, I think, that Jake Tapper has to be the absolute biggest dolt in all of the media right now. You know, we lost a few of these, like Acosta's gone and he's chirping out there on a podcast. You got, you know, what's his name? Chuck Todd is still around doing a podcast. Here's Tapper last night.
Never heard a president attack the opposition in a speech like this in such a pointed way, even going after to use a rather derisive nickname for Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Right, who reacted with smiles and clapping. Basically, she wasn't going to give him that moment.
Oh, Jake had his little butt hurt because Trump called Elizabeth Warren appropriately Pocahontas because she lied about her native. How about highlighting it that way? You know, the president took a jab at one of the United States senators because she lied for decades about her national or her,
her
Native
heritage.
American heritage. So Carolyn Leavitt addressing the liberal media.
Last night, MSNBC's Nicole Wallace disgustingly looped in a 13-year-old boy with brain cancer into an attack on the president over January 6th. And CNN's first chyron out of the speech called it divisive. President Trump wasn't divisive. The Democrats were. And CNN was proven wrong by their own viewers, 69% of whom, in a post-speech poll, said they had a positive reaction to the president's speech. It's sad and frankly pathetic that Democrats and liberals in the legacy media continue to allow their hatred for the president to override their love for our country.
So I kind of did that one upside down because you heard her refer to this soundbite.
I hope he has a long life as a law enforcement officer, but I hope he never has to defend the United States Capitol against Donald Trump supporters. And if he does, I hope he isn't one of the six who loses his life to suicide.
I mean, she is so disgusting, Nicole Wallace. I don't know what happened to her. Let's not forget that she was in the first Bush administration, but she's talking about a little boy who was honored last night as a special Secret Service agent. And that's how she, you know, covered the topic. It's disgusting what's happening out there. Our friend Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago is back with us. He watched the speech and wrote some great columns this morning. How are you, Charles? Good afternoon.
I'm doing just great. It's great to hear from you. It was a hell of a speech, wasn't it?
Well, I'm told by Jake Tapper and others it was just a campaign speech. It's kind of funny. The reaction is so opposite of what a lot of the pundits are telling you. And they don't want to highlight any of these things that the Democrats could not even get on board for, which, you know, include catching terrorists, destroying the cartel, a West Point admission. None of those things were popular with the Democrats.
I'll say. When I write about speeches like the one that I wrote about yesterday. By the way, if listeners want to get any of those from me for free, it's Charles Lipson, Lipson, Charles Lipson at Gmail, and I'll put them on the list. But when I listened, as I did yesterday, I cut off immediately after the speech because I don't want to hear what anybody says. Oh. I don't want to react.
Interesting.
To friendly comments or to negative comments. I just want to give my own comments. And what I thought was basically two things. That the first was that the details which were packed into the speech were not the message. The message was the first sentence out of President Trump's mouth, which is America is back and we've got a lot more work to do, and you know we're going to keep doing it. And that theme, which he started with and which he ended with, I thought the ending of the speech was terrific as well. And then the second theme was that Democrats hate him so much that they can't even stand to clap for a child who survived cancer. That was an apolitical point. And, you know, by this point, they're so angry. I think they came in angry. They went out angry. They were angry in the middle. And Donald Trump did a lot of pointed comments at them, so I can understand that. But when you can't stand to clap for a child who survived cancer and whom... just awful.
That's the one that really gets me, is this little boy, he has child. I mean, there's no reason to sit on your hands for that. And by the way, here's what Trump said about some of this.
This is my fifth such speech to Congress. And once again, I look at the Democrats in front of me, and I realize there is absolutely nothing I can say to make them happy or to make them stand or smile or applaud. Nothing I can do. I could find a cure to the most devastating disease, a disease that would wipe out entire nations. And these people sitting right here will not clap, will not stand.
Well, I don't know if they fact-checked that. That would be 100% true, Charles.
It was absolutely true. And, of course, it played right into his hands. But they don't have to stand and clap for policies that you and I would stand and clap for, closing the southern border and so forth. By the way, he made a really interesting point on that, and he made it in a devastating way. He pointed out that Biden had said all along that he couldn't close the southern border because he needed new legislation.
That's right. This was brilliant.
And
yep.
It was brilliant. He said, I not only closed it, you didn't need new legislation. You needed a new president.
Well, it's so true. And the numbers that you're looking at are just staggering. So that whole argument that we heard over and over, it was one of the lame talking points in the presidential election, completely blown up as untrue. But again, you're not going to see a lot of attention in the Washington Post, New York Times, and other outlets about that.
But let me just, yes, that's absolutely true. Well, not in the Washington Post for the next few weeks. But I think that's going to change. because Jeff Bezos doesn't want to keep losing hundreds of millions of dollars to be the House organ for unemployed government bureaucrats. But the New York Times will keep at it, and NBC will keep at it, and so forth. But I heard the other day, I heard Megyn Kelly, or somebody say about Megyn Kelly, that her total listenership was about the same as CNN, and she was making about as much money as their entire on-air staff.
That's quite stunning. I mean, I would absolutely believe that her ratings and the listenership is as high as CNN because their numbers aren't that great. They're you know, averaging in some of the primetime shows only 600,000 people. That's that's not compared to Fox, which has got 3 million.
Yeah. By the way, we have a mayor in Chicago who has 6% in the that's how what percentage of the surveyed people like him.
Are they trying to recall Brandon Johnson?
I don't know that we even have recall here, but it's a really sad situation. Let me go back to the National Democrats for a minute. You can oppose, if you're the party out of power, you can oppose. But if you just oppose mindlessly, you're going to end up in bad situation because what Trump and his team have done is pick 80-20 issues, sometimes 90-10 issues, in which is overwhelming support for one side. And then if the Democrats are going to be reflexively oppositional, they'll take the other side. Well, look, if you take the side of people who don't like a child cancer survivor, you're going to be in trouble.
I would think so. You know, and let me get your thoughts on that front on one of these 80-20 issues, because there was not one Democrat member of the Senate that stood up on this issue of biological men competing against biological women. And even John Fetterman, I'm going to ask Selena Zito this a little later, Charles, because she's going to join me in the 5 o'clock hour. But Fetterman, who seems to be one of the lone, you know, sane people in that party, tweeted this out yesterday. The small handful of trans athletes in Pennsylvania in a political maelstrom deserve an ally, and I am one. Depersonalized as they, them in a political ad, but are just school children. That line there is curious to me. Empty show votes or cruelty on social media aren't part of a thoughtful, dignified solution. Well, I don't know where his dignified solution is, because, again, I'm not sure that it matters to a lot of people that there's a small handful. What matters is that if my daughter goes to, you know, her high school or to the University of Missouri where my other kids went, and she's an athlete, if she has to compete and change clothes in a dressing room as Riley Gaines and some of these other Paul Scanlon had to do against Will Thomas, that's outrageous. So I don't care if it's just one athlete, really, personally, that does that. But why are they so off the reservation on that, Charles?
I think that they're very much committed to their progressive base. I guess what I would say, let me draw a couple of distinctions which some of your audience may disagree with, you may disagree with. To me, if an adult wants to say he's a woman now, and there's some reason, there's no other reason than that to think that this is a person in psychological difficulty or whatever, then I'm fine with that. And I want to, as long as it's not a game of Simon Says on what your pronouns are or whatever,
yeah,
I want to call you what you want to be called. I want to be a respectful, decent human being. But I don't believe that children should be given irreversible gender treatments any more than I think children should be allowed to drive an 18-wheeler car. And I don't believe that it's fair to have competition in women's sports. And I've written about this for several years. If I think the question to ask people who believe that this kind of competition is fair is, why don't we just have single-gender sports for everything?
Charles, I've heard some of these wackos on the left actually cave and say they think that's a good idea. Mainly, they say that because they don't have any place to go with the argument.
I think that's right. There are some people who think that in academic, you get in the world of professors where I used to live, you get some crazy ideas. And one idea that a lot of these ideas come out of academic world, but one of them is that things aren't real unless you sort of make them up in your head. And I heard one person say to such a person making an argument, he said, "Do you think there's a giraffe in the room with us?" And that person couldn't answer because, I mean, it was just obvious there's no giraffe in the room, right? I mean, by any measurement, there's no giraffe in the room. But if you want to say that everything can be made up on your own, then you could say, well, yeah, well, you say there's no giraffe, but I say there is. And I think you've got a lot of people who,
I understand the analogy because here's the thing, and I always go back to this because at one point I asked Riley Gaines this very question. I said, how is it that they can't at least acknowledge that is not, fair? And her answer was, well, if they do that, the whole house of cards falls down, right? Because then they have to admit that person is not a woman. And they won't do that because they say, to your point, that's a woman, that makes it so.
I think that's right, but I think it's only half the story. I think the other half of the story is that it's how they keep their political coalition together. I think it's you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Not that I'm making that offer, Mark.
No, I understand. But... I understand the point, though. Hey, before I let you go, though, I got to get one thing. And I have our candidate for comptroller in the city of St. Louis had a bit of an upset. We had some interesting results in a mayor's race. And Donna Berenger, who's a regular on my show, is going to join us with her take on the elections in a second. But I know you wrote a little bit about tariffs. I'm concerned about the tariffs. He addressed them last night. I had a farmer on my show yesterday, Blake Hurst, from the other side of the state, very concerned. I could hear the worry in his voice. It's hard enough being a farmer outside of these tariffs. I had, someone else on, my friend Joe Warmington, who's up in Toronto, writes for the Toronto Sun, not happy about the Canadian tariffs. He supports Trump on almost everything. So what would you say on this front?
I'd say that there are a couple of things to think about. One is whether jacking up tariffs is a negotiating ploy to get others to lower their tariffs, not necessarily on the same goods. They may have low tariffs on soybeans, but high tariffs on our cars or something else. And so we threaten to raise tariffs. They say we'll cut off your soybeans. And what we're really hoping for is lower tariffs. And there can be pain in the short term because those negotiations, you don't know how they'll turn out and you don't know how long it'll take. The other thing, and this is what I think concerns me, is that Trump seems to think that a world where everybody has somewhat higher tariffs would be a better world. I actually don't think that's the case. I think we would be impoverished by it.
That's why I'm concerned. But look, they granted a one-month exemption for the automakers. That happened today. The Dow jumped 500 points on that particular pause. So I'm not an expert on this stuff, but what I've been saying is there's maybe a wait-and-see approach that is necessary in a lot of these issues, at least for now. Charles, thank you so much. Appreciate your take on the speech and more. Always great to have you on. We'll talk soon.
I love talking with you, Mark.
All right, take care. We had, interesting results in the city election in St. Louis. We're going to go over those and be joined by maybe the next comptroller next. Go blind and hail. Fish Fry Friday is coming up this Friday, our first stop. We're very, very excited. We'd love for you to come out and see. The entire show will be broadcast there, including the roundtable at Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church in the city, 1910 Serbian Drive. Don't forget, Brian Kilmeade is coming back here very quickly on the 22nd at the factory, and there are VIP experiences still available at briankilmeade.com. And I think Brian's going to join us on the show tomorrow afternoon. Hey, as I was watching the speech last night, and by the way, the totals were not coming in fast and furiously, but it took a little while to get the decision in the mayor's race. I think a lot of us were hopeful that Tish would be sent packing first round. It's a little different in the city. You have this ranked choice voting. So she did make it to the second round, but Kara Spencer just blew her away. And I would expect that our mayor is in trouble. But really, the surprise may have come. And we had her on the roundtable on Friday, Donna Berenger, former state rep. She ran against longtime City Comptroller Darlene Green, and she won. Listen. Now, she still has a runoff, but Donna is with us here this afternoon to talk about this. Congratulations, Donna.
Donna, I was not surprised because I have seen signs in my neighbors, and we were all really pulling for you, so I was thrilled.
Well, you were very confident on Friday, and I, you know, look, I'll tell you that my gut, just because of the way that the city usually goes, I didn't think you would be able to squeak out a victory here, but that's pretty huge. And, you know, one of the things that you were talking about on the roundtable, I want you to address this, Donna, because you just felt this when you were going door to door, right?
Yes, I did.
Because
yes, I did.
People were saying what to you? They wanted change. They were frustrated with a lot of the city services.
They did. They said, I'm done. I want everybody out that's been in there. It's time for a change. And that was the mantra I heard in every neighborhood I was in.
So what happens now? Because now that it's down to two candidates, same thing with the mayor, is there more money that's put in from, you know, from Darlene? And does this get a little nastier here in the next few weeks?
Yeah, what happens?
Yes. So what's going to happen? Well, she put a hit piece out on me that hit the day 2 days before the actual election. But my people could see right through it. And it really had nothing to do with the comptroller's race, to be honest with you, and what they do. But I've been going to all these forums and we've been speaking, and the comptroller has made some statements that might be a little not factual. But my biggest thing I want to focus on is I need people to know what the comptroller is supposed to be doing. Because if you look at the turnout for the races, you'll see that the mayor's race had more people vote in it than the comptroller's race. And people were telling me, if I didn't get a chance to talk to them before they walked in, they were telling me, I'm sorry, I didn't know what the comptroller did, so I figured I shouldn't vote in it at all. And so my job is to try and make sure everyone knows that the comptroller is one of the three decision makers for the entire city. Anything that gets done in our city has to go through the Board of Estimate and Apportionment. And that's the mayor, the comptroller, and the president of the Board of Aldermen. So when everyone's upset with the ARPA funds, when they're upset with the RAMS money, the Board of Estimate and Apportionment, it began with them. And that's why I tell people that I have been very good at making the best decisions for people, especially the taxpayers of the city of St. Louis. And so that's what I'm going to focus on, is letting people know this is a leadership role. There's already a deputy comptroller who's a CPA, and they are understaffed, they are overworked, and I need to get in there, and I need to straighten things out, and I look forward to making it a positive move forward for our city.
Darlene Green has been in this position since 1995. She was appointed to the post originally, and she's barely had anybody really even challenge her over the years, right, Donna?
Correct. The last person to challenge her was Jim Shrewsbury in 1996.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
That's
insane. And, you know, it was interesting, and I think that the, you know, I will criticize the local paper quite a bit, but they sort of have their thumb on the fact that a lot of these voters came out and they want change. And, Sue, you know, because you're in the city.
Yes.
Donna, you've knocked on these doors. It does seem to be a change election. What would you say about what Kara did in the mayor's race, Donna?
I'm not at all surprised by it. I'm really not. The only thing that surprised me is, for some reason, I thought it would be Michael and Kara. I really did. But Michael came very close. He really did. So I think more people voted for one candidate and not multiple. That to me is why those numbers are so far apart. At least that's my feeling. So I think it's going to happen again in April. And I'll be working to do the same thing in my race in April.
Yeah. So remind us, because is it the first Tuesday in April? Is that what we're looking at? Is it April? No, it'll be April 8th. April 8th. All right. So April. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't want to vote on April Fool's Day, right? That could get confusing and somewhat uncomfortable. Donna, congratulations. Really great work out there. I know you worked hard.
Thank
we'll see you on the roundtable soon. Take care.
All right.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, look, it speaks volumes about the frustration of the people in the city of St. Louis.
It really does.
Thank God.
Get more at 971talk.com.